Being in the margins of medicine, it's the Short Coat Podcast.
Weird news,
fresh views,
helpful clues, and interviews.
By students, for students.
Subscribe to our weekly show at theshortcoat.com.
Welcome back to the Short Coat Podcast. I'm Dave Etler. And nobody really wants to hear me go on and on about how I'm glad you're listening. And how great it is that it's Friday, and how great it is that the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics is the seventh best employer in the country, according to Forbes.
Yay!
Better than Facebook, Mayo Clinic, or Apple.
Wow.
Or how amazing my co-hosts are, even if they are Aline Sanduk, Lisa Weir, Mark
Hadley
Terrell,
Hill.
And Dylan Todd.
I don't know how to take that.
I love you guys.
Even.
The listeners already know how great you are. And they're no doubt on the edge of their seats for the nuggets of comedy and wisdom that you're about to drop on their,
mm-hmm.
on
That's
their
a lot of pressure.
Ear holes. So let's just.
I'm going to drop a nugget of comedy in your ear hole right now. Sounds like a lot of people would like that.
That's such a lovely metaphor.
Uh-oh, our viewership just dropped like.
Fits right in there.
So let's just begin. Hey, we've got a listener question from Oscar. Let's play that.
Hey, this is Oscar from beautiful, sunny Miami, Florida. I just wanted to call and let you guys know I love the show and big-time listener. I've been accepted to my top choice medical school, and I'm matriculating in the fall. And I've never been nervous about being able to handle the course load or anxious about it, but all of a sudden I find myself becoming nervous, anxious, and I don't know where it's coming from. And I don't know, is fear a good thing when you're coming into M1? Is that going to help you stay on top of your studies? Because there's so much talk about how dreadful it is and how awful it is. And I don't know. I'm quite frankly, I'm kind of excited, but all of a sudden, I've just become nervous. How do you deal with the pre-M1 anxiety? Again, love the podcast. Keep it up. You guys are doing a great job. Take care.
I left both parts in where he says
he
how awesome we are.
Yeah, he strokes our egos so well.
We love you too, Oscar.
Yeah.
So Oscar's a little anxious.
Okay.
And he hasn't even started yet.
So perfectly natural,
yep.
Right? Would everyone agree with that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In regards to will it help him, my instinct is a yes and a no.
But I don't think that's really something he needs to worry about, because I think it's just an inevitability of the stress and the reality of it. I would advise that he enjoys his time now and relaxes.
Okay, but truthfully, how many people told you that before you started medical school and you're still like, oh my God, I don't know how to do this?
Right, and then the thing is too, that like I remember so many times pre-medical students, or when I was a pre-medical student, I would go and I'd find like a kid who was in medical school and I'd be like, oh, like I'm interested in medical school. And everyone would kind of be like, oh, are you sure? And I'm like, that's concerning. But I mean, the reality is it's hard to express to someone what it really means, because it means different things for different people.
And it's not all good or all bad.
Right,
different parts that you enjoy and some parts you don't enjoy.
It's a hot tub, medical school.
Yes.
Because if you jumped right into a hot tub, you'd be like, oh my God, this is like people
jump right
sit
into
in
a
this.
Hot tub?
Like, this is like going to burn my skin off.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, you kind of ease into it, so I guess.
Yeah. But if you stay in too long, then your blood pressure drops and you pass out.
All right, the analogy falls apart because I jump right into hot tubs.
Okay.
No, but I think the other thing too is that, again, like the biggest thing is that this is pretty normal for him to feel, and
for sure.
Pretty much all of his classmates are going to feel the same. So I think he'll find a lot of. Enjoyment in meeting the other people, and I think that'll help a lot, is just being around other people that will be feeling the same as him.
I think there's something to be said about the fact that you spend so many years basically planning for a medical career, and a lot of money, and there's a lot of steps, and sometimes people don't make it, and then when they do, they're like, oh my God, what do I do now?
Now it's for real.
Now you go, yeah.
Yeah. Well, right. I mean, and I think, like, it's too much anxiety is a bad thing, because then you'll stress too much and not focus, right? But also having a little bit of anxiety is a good thing, because it's way harder than undergrad.
Yeah.
Like, let's be honest, the majority of us went through undergrad like no problem, didn't blink twice about most every exam. And then you hit med school and everyone has to study more, like has to study.
And it's also very disconcerting to be around people who aren't stressed about medical school. not that it's their fault or that there's anything wrong with that, but it's,
I think everyone is.
Yeah, well, the problem is that they just
don't show
it.
People deal with stress in different ways. Yeah,
that's
like
true.
For me,
yeah.
Like people might think that I'm not stressed about medical school, but my way of dealing with it, I'm just like, I'm just going to do other things. And like, well, it's not always great because I should be like studying for this test or that test.
Sure.
But it's how I deal with stress. So I think, like you're saying, that can be unnerving for some people. Yeah. It's like, oh, like, he's never upset. Like, why am I so upset? But I think it's just that people deal with it in different ways.
For sure.
I'm wondering, so he was clear. You can poke me harder than that. So Corey and I have a deal, just for our listeners. And we're going to pause this discussion. Corey and I have a deal. He's going to poke me every time I say, And we considered...
Sorry, guys.
But it adds character.
It does. Well, I'm not against all us. I just do it too often. Mm-hmm. You know, when I go back and listen to the show as we edit every week, I discover that I'm a big person. Anyway, point is, we consider things like shock collars and stuff like that, but I don't know if we're
there
yet.
Have you considered just taking a breath when you want to say
Wait.
There are techniques. I'm trying to learn these techniques.
What if we went the opposite? Because we were just talking about how shock collars, negative reinforcement isn't always the best. We could try positive reinforcement. Every time Dave doesn't say
Dave,
we could throw him a piece of candy.
What's your favorite candy, Dave?
I think there are some problems with that. Anyway,
I don't see any problems.
If I suddenly go, ow, it's because Corey poked me. And not, Anyway, So we've addressed.
Yeah, all the ours are going to become ours. So it changes nothing.
We've addressed Oscar's concerns about.
There's something else I want to say to Oscar.
Okay.
So maybe the anxiety comes from a small part inside of ourselves where we're worried that, you know, maybe we're one of those people that slip through the cracks and we don't really belong here and it's just going to get worse.
And what do we call that?
Imposter syndrome. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a well known problem.
It's
for
very
medical
pervasive.
Students.
Yeah. So just think of it this way. It's not up to you, right? Like, your job is to apply and do your best, and there are people whose entire jobs depend on picking the right people for this. So you've been vetted. It was never a mistake. You were selected because you had the right traits to become a successful doctor, or at the very least, a successful medical student. So use the anxiety to motivate you. Like, let that be the little voice inside of you that tells you to keep going, don't be afraid, because it'll keep you humble, and that's a very good thing for a doctor and a medical student to be.
I was going to say that if you're still in the stage where you're picking a school, and you're going through your interviews and you're doing your research, look for schools that will support you when things go wrong. Mm-hmm. Because
absolutely,
they will go wrong. I mean, that's just part of life. Things don't always go to plan. So look for information about remediation policies. Look for available resources.
All medical schools that you're applying to are accredited, right? Like, whatever happens, whatever school you go to, you're going to get an MD. But the trick is finding the school that has the same values and convictions that are important to you.
Yeah.
And also the resources to support you when things get hard, because it will be hard.
And some of what I'm going to say is a bit squishy, but if you go to an interview and you get the idea that the school is going to really support you, think carefully about that school. Put that on your... You're not poking me hard enough, dude. I want to poke. I want... Yes. The scissors
Corey
came out.
The scissors.
Oh, he's putting them right next to me as a threatening gesture. CCOM, for instance, Carver College of Medicine, we have our student handbook front and center, every page of the OSAC, the MD programs portion of the web. I think that says a lot, because inside there are all the remediation policies, all of the things that we have available to support students. The fact that we're sort of out there with it, I think, says something. If you can find a school that is out there with all of their policies, is giving you information about the support mechanisms that they have in place.
It's transparent.
All that kind of is transparent about stuff. I don't know, man, I'm biased, I know, but I think it's a good thing.
You'll also know, like, I've talked to a lot of people, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but there seem to be a lot of people who just know when they set foot on a campus, like, okay, like, this is the one. And I felt that when I came here.
And if you don't know, maybe you're saying if you don't know for sure, you've stepped foot on that campus, you've talked to people, and at the end you're not sure.
Use revisit day. Like, do second look day, whatever those are, you know. And look into the things.
Day. Huh? We call it get acquainted day.
Get acquainted day. Not everyone gets that feeling, but I know I felt it, and like you'll maybe get to a place and realize like that's where you're gonna fit in the most, regardless of everything else. Like you'll get a feeling about it, I think.
Plus, human psychology says once you pick a decision, you'll feel better about it. It's like, oh yeah, that was the right one.
Especially if you pay a ton of money for it.
Right. But actually,
yes, that's true. True. Like, yeah. The more money you pay for something, the more happy you are about it because you better be. So I hope we've helped you, Oscar, and other people who are undergoing the same problems. If you have a listener question, go to theshortcoat.com/tell us. There's 100 ways to get in. Well, not 100. There are ways to get in touch with us there.
Close to 100. We love questions.
We
love to hear from our listeners.
It's true.
You know, there's a lot of information that we can provide that you might be embarrassed to ask, you know, people in proximity. Maybe you want to be anonymous. That's okay. This is the place to do it. So don't be afraid. Just ask.
Oh, and be careful of internet forums. Not going to mention any in particular, but be careful of internet forums.
That's like just a general rule.
Yeah.
True. Don't believe everything you read on the internet.
Yeah.
Forums and comment sections.
Yep. Mm. Mm-hmm. We'll tell you the truth, my friends. We will tell you the truth.
Hey, Dave, I sold my Osprey backpack.
Oh, okay. So we'll take that off the table. You were listening last week.
Did that make the final cut?
Sure it did.
Okay, good. Because I'm crediting it entirely to the podcast.
When did that go?
It went just this week, yeah.
What day did you get rid of it?
On Wednesday.
No, sure, I hadn't come out until Thursday. So.
Oh, you're right.
But, you know.
Damn. I'm sure our listeners wanted to know, though, so that's good.
Yeah, yes. Right. It worked out.
That's right.
Matchmaker, matchmaker, make me a match. Find me a find, catch me a catch. Thousands of dollars of loans to repay. So please let this be a good match day.
So as we record this match week.
You sound really good in that.
Thank you. As we record this match week ended about a week ago. If you don't know what that is yet, it's the week when soon to graduate medical students find out two things. If they will be allowed to go on to residency, and then where they will go to continue their education as resident physicians. And it happens after a long winter of interviews and travel and worry and just general angst. So we know a few statistics about the 2016 match. And keep in mind that these stats don't include the results of what happens after match, which was called the Supplemental Offer and Exchange Program, or Supplemental Offer and Acceptance Program, excuse me. Okay. Just the results of the infamous match scramble algorithm.
Oh, wow.
And they don't include what happens after match week. That is, folks can still apply for the remaining open positions that happen, that are still there after the whole kit and caboodle is over. And the stats are filled with caveats, like if you apply to 30 anesthesia programs and 30 emergency medicine programs, that's 60 applications, but you're counted as two applicants. It's a huge pain to figure out what all this stuff means. But we're going to give you some statistics to start off the discussion. The NRMP says this year's match was the largest ever, with 42,370 applicants versus 30,750 available positions.
So it's large in terms of applicants rather than position increase?
Yeah, the positions haven't increased much, if at all.
That's what I thought. Hmm.
There were 27,860 first-year positions available. There were 18,187 U.S. senior applicants, and there were 17,057 matched U.S. seniors, again, when the algorithm was completed. So allopathic seniors accounted for 94% of allopathic medical school seniors matched at the end of the algorithm. The previous year's grads who had to go through the match a second time, 49% of them matched. U.S. grads of international schools, 54% of them matched. Non-U.S. grads of international schools, 51% of them matched. So in both cases, these are students who went to schools outside of the U.S.
But are U.S. citizens.
So U.S. citizen graduates of international school, mm-hmm. 54% of them match. Non-U.S. citizen grads, 51% of the match. I would like to point out it's only a little bit better than chance. So if you are a U.S. citizen considering a international school for whatever reason,
I think there's a lot of really good ones, and it's definitely an option if you don't get into your top choice domestically, and it'll cost a lot of money.
It'll cost, because those are, I think, largely for profit.
And I would not exclusively. I would say I would only keep it as an option if you don't get in anywhere domestically, because I think a lower choice domestically is still a better.
I don't know why anybody would choose a international grad program if they, or an international medical education program if they got into a U.S. medical school.
Unless they wanted to practice somewhere else.
Yeah, if you want to practice somewhere else. Yeah.
Or if you wanted to live abroad for 4 years.
Yeah, but
there's a very nice school
in
Ireland.
Advantage that people are like. They're much stricter about the scores they require to interview applicants from there. They take no mercy on having failed step one. Like, they're not kind to U.S. grads who failed step one once, and if you're an international grad and you failed it once, you're kind of done for. So the stakes are a lot higher at that point. So yeah, it's unfortunate.
So why don't people match? The AAMC says that these are the reasons. They had low scores on USMLE exams, the licensing exams. They weren't competitive for their first choice specialty. They didn't have an appropriate backup or alternative plan. They didn't follow guidance from their faculty advisor or dean's office. They had poor interviewing or interpersonal skills. They didn't rank enough programs, or they failed a USMLE exam outright. By the way, read a study this week that chewing gum before a test boosts performance. It's called mastication-induced arousal. The effect only lasts for 15 to 20 minutes, and you shouldn't do it during the test because you literally cannot chew gum and take a test at the same time, apparently. That doesn't work.
Isn't there some research that, like, taking a walk before a test does the same thing?
Any sort of physical exercise is beneficial. I just thought it was fun.
Which is like consistent with everything. It's like, oh, you know, make it better. If you were active, move on.
But you don't have to do much. All you have to do is chew some gum.
Does it have to be sugar-free, or are they talking about Nicorette?
I'd like to see the statistics.
Doesn't matter.
I want to see the study design.
But anyway, what does this mean for the 8,640 people who didn't match, which includes IMGs and grads, international medical graduates, and graduates from other years, so that's what that number encompasses. What other positions, what can you do with an MD that's not doctoring?
Oh, you can do a lot.
Well, hit me.
I mean, you could potentially go into politics. You see that Rand Paul and his father, regardless of your political opinion, they're both physicians.
Bill Frist of Tennessee.
Yeah, but they did residencies, though.
Yeah, but you don't have to do a residency to be a politician.
That's true.
Yeah.
You don't have to do anything to be a politician. It's pretty clear.
You just have to be dishonest.
But being able to say that you, being able to have an MD after your name, a lot of people don't understand. Like, what? Like, look at this match sheet. Like, a lot of people don't understand what the match is, what residency is, how it's different than medical school, what a fellowship is, and how it's different than residency. You tell them you have an MD from a U.S. medical school. You graduated your medical
class. You call yourself doctor forever.
Well, but the point is, it gives you some measure of credibility. Whether or not the residency program has decided you're good enough to continue to practice medicine, you still have a lot of knowledge. So you can go into politics. You could choose to go more into science.
Nonprofit?
Research. Always
public
research.
Yeah, you could be a writer of
research.
Some sorts. You could do public health.
This is, you guys tell me if this is true. Research is often, so after match and you don't match, research is often considered like the consolation prize. It seems like, well, I'll just go into research. I think that's the wrong way of looking at it.
That's backwards.
Yeah, I would disagree. Yeah.
Well, I've got a room full of MSTP people, medical scientist training program people. But, you know, like, if you're going to...
You can if you really want to do research.
But that means...
I just would be miserable doing research if I didn't want to do it because it's terrible.
Yeah. You also have to have a lot of collaborations because you don't have the scientific training to do research. Mm-hmm. But if you're very outgoing, then it's fine.
But you'd be... I think you could easily find a lab to work in.
Of course, yeah.
Missouri, Kansas, and Arkansas all have programs on the books anyway where you could work in medically underserved communities without residency.
You could also go into industry.
Sadly, the program hasn't
student
been...
Health,
the,
student
none
health.
Of those programs have been implemented yet, even though they've been on the books for 2 years.
I do think it's interesting, though, like, as a medical student grad, if I don't get into residency, like, at least for 1 year, I can't practice. But PA students who have the same first two and a half years as us, like literally the exact same first couple years as us now, can go practice without a residency. So it does seem a little odd. I mean, of course, they have to have physician oversight, but and that's what like the Missouri program has to have physician oversight. So I mean, that program kind of makes sense, even though people are getting all up in the air about it.
There are some circumstances where you can practice medicine in a limited extent without.
Well, why wouldn't you just
like you can do it at student health? Actually, is what I heard. Yeah,
no way.
I don't know if that's how it is here.
Not here,
but other places.
But other places.
Well, why wouldn't you just sit for the PA certification exam?
Because you probably have to go to PA school.
I don't know
if you do.
You can't take step one.
You can get
not.
A. You can't what?
You can't take step one.
Well, but if you've already taken step one.
Right, but if like you're a PharmD student, I think a PhD in pharmacology can still take the same licensing examination to actually distribute drugs. Mara was telling me this. John's wife, this is one of our friends who's a pharmacist.
John Piantz's wife.
Yes. Right. Yes. Yeah. One of our frequent co-hosts.
So. There's also lots of businesses focused on health these days, including startups. For instance, Stanford graduates are more frequently go into the startup scene just because they're near Silicon Valley and that's kind of part of the culture there. Healthcare admin, maybe? I don't know.
I think a lot of people would go to medical school just to have the, like, good training and understanding human health, but it's too expensive to do that. Like, you're almost pigeonholed into doing clinical care because it's the only real means to pay off your loans, unless you do an MD PhD program. In which case, there's an understanding that you want primarily to be a scientist, but you need human knowledge, like knowledge of human health to do the kind of science that you want to do, right?
Yeah. You know, the University of Illinois College of Medicine has a residency preparedness initiative that's focused on a couple of things. First of all, strategic planning for MATCH and alternative career paths, which I found interesting because my guess is that in most medical schools, there are one, maybe two career paths that are officially acknowledged. Either you go into clinical medicine or you go into research, but... You know, there aren't other sort of avenues, I think, openly discussed. Whereas the University of Illinois sort of has this built into this program. If a graduate has participated in the initiative and doesn't match and is unable to find a position, the college assumes the interest of their medical school loans for the first year.
Wow.
Wow.
Yeah, that's interesting.
So
that's very progressive.
I thought that was very interesting.
Put your money where your
mouth is.
Bureaucracy is.
Yes.
But I don't think
that'll put the real phrase out of the real saying out of business,
But I mean, look at all the things we named that are jobs that a doctor could use their training for even without residency training. I think that the problem isn't necessarily that there aren't jobs to do, it's that a lot of these people came from undergrad, they went to medical school, and they followed kind of like the cut. I mean, medical training as a whole is so laid out in terms of what you need to do and structure.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah, it's not like undergrad where you can pick your classes and do this.
Right.
There are very few opportunities for sort
and
of individual explanation. Generally speaking, some schools...
When a lot of people want to be successful in doing a lot of different things, when they graduate college, there's this period where they're like, oh my God, like, what am I doing? I have to work this random job. But then, I mean, they'll make connections. They'll figure out what they want to do. The problem is there's not structure. So I think anyone can do that stuff. And then having the MD just gives you a ton of credibility. But a lot of people, suddenly, it's like that scene in A Bug's Life where they're following all in a line and a leaf falls down in their path and they lose the line and everyone panics. Like, where's the line? We don't know where to go. So I think that's really the biggest issue with it. Like, a lot of people look at it, they don't match. It's like, oh my God, my life's over. But I mean, really, I guess the choice you have now is whether to try and reapply and try and match or to think about if it's really what you want to do and all these other things you could do.
So the, I don't know, you get to the end of MATCH, you didn't match, it's got to feel horrible, I get it.
Yeah.
You know, there's no two ways about it. You know, the thing that you've worked for a long time, it is becoming less an option.
it's not completely, because you could go through it again the next year, and mm-hmm. you may in fact match the next
year. You know anything about statistics? Any of you guys on like re-application?
Yeah.
Applicants.
I think it's the second.
So the previous year is half of them will match.
PGY1, is that what that mm-hmm. is?
I think so.
Half of them will match. Oof. So, you know, that brings it up to what, 99.8 or something will end up at. I think that the odds are of you, you know, completing medical school with a residency if you're a U.S. grad. Mm-hmm. I think it's clear that the odds are excellent.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And this is, you know, you got to keep this in mind. Because almost no other job out there has this sort of guarantee.
Right.
You know?
This level of job security.
This level of job security. So even though it feels like you're sort of surrendering yourself to the match algorithm or the universe or whatever god you pray to.
Okay, the match algorithm is not the universe. Just clarifying.
Neither is it a deity.
Anyway,
just so we're clear.
You know, it is from a certain perspective, I guess. It's what owns you, I guess, during that period. But, you know, no matter what, you're going to do well.
Yeah.
Right. It is like
it may not be what you planned on. And, you know, as what I read from the AAMC says, you know, you gotta think a little bit strategically about it. If you want to be an ophthalmologist and your scores and your grades don't support being an ophthalmologist, you're not going to be an ophthalmologist. Get it out of your head.
Mm-hmm.
Pick something else.
Good advising is really key, actually, at all stages of this process. I applied twice, and I think part of the reason that I had to apply
to medical school
is because I didn't have realistic expectations the first time around, and I didn't have a lot of guidance for like where my scores were appropriate. Mm-hmm. So.
Yep, and that's your dean's and your, you know, medical school's job is to provide you with that sort of guidance. Listen to them. Don't go, well, you know, I know they said that, but I'm sure I'll be fine with my plans. You know, if those two don't match up, then change your plans. Make some changes.
Yeah, better to limbo than to hurdle. Is that what you're saying? Like, better to have a sure
yes.
thing than to
lower your...
I think that works, limbo or hurdle.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's
your second analogy of the day. You're limited to three.
I think that one was better than the...
you're limited to three a day, Dylan.
I think... Referring to strategy, there's, I don't know if you guys have ever read the 48 Laws of Power.
No.
There's
48 of them?
There's 48.
I'm never going to read this.
There's 49, actually.
No, yes. The first one is Read the Laws of Power.
Yeah.
Read the Laws of Power. No, so it's a really interesting book for anyone who likes history, which is why it was given to me.
Who
because,
wrote it?
It was written by Robert Greene. Robert Greene.
Okay.
So he's, I think, like a history and classic professor.
That name rings a bell.
He also wrote like something, like a book about seduction, like a similar book, The Laws of Seduction.
Power so, and Seduction?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So, he's a big fan of House of Cards.
I am now just a little bit more interested in reading about the 48 Rules of Power.
So the 48th law of power, I think, is really
getting right to the.
So is that the most important or the least important?
I think it's the best one. And
the first rule is that there's no particular order to the rules.
Yeah. Okay. It says instead of taking, accept the fact that nothing is certain and no law is fixed. The best way to protect yourself is to be as fluid and formless as water. Never
Whoa.
Bet on
no,
stability.
No, this is like the teachings of Bruce Lee.
Yeah.
Like actually.
Never bet on stability or lasting order. Everything changes. I think that is truly the key to happiness, actually. The key to surviving medical school and the key to happiness overall is just to have no expectations of anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just do what you want and be prepared for any outcome. And be prepared to accept that things aren't going to work out because there's always a chance.
I think like what a lot of this is rooted in, I've talked about it a couple times, but I see it a lot, is that medical students are so... They essentially shrink in during their training and all they do is study. And they kind of like let go of all their other ties and things during usually their early 20s. And they do this for 4 years. And this is a time when people like are really defining themselves. And these people who have now only defined themselves by their medical training are a slave to it, essentially. If they fail a test, like that is their life now that's
yeah.
disrupted.
That's
why I really advise to keep up with things outside of medicine and like take time to think about like what kind of person you want to be, like who you want to be on top of just what you want to be. Because I think that's just so important to what you're saying. The ability to adapt and fit to different situations really relies on like a faith in yourself, not just a faith in your ability as a medical student, which I think a lot of people tie themselves down to.
I have that's no so faith true. In that.
That is advice I cannot top.
I suspect that a lot of medical students would have difficulty with the advice to let it go.
And but just, here's you know, the thing. Like,
because medical students, they are type A people. They like to control right. what's happening. They believe that their brain power, that through the sheer force of will, mm-hmm. can accomplish everything or they want. They think that this should be the
because
case.
Because that's been the case for yeah. a lot of them for a long time.
Right. But
so
the point
not...
is that you... No, and you're not always in control.
It's a complicated
sometimes
piece
you gotta
of advice,
seduce Gio. What you want.
Yes, bring us back to the 42nd law of power.
You can't always use your brain.
Use your voice.
It's gonna make for a really awkward interview for residency. Saying what you want.
But like the point that Mark made is really astute, actually, because if 100% of your life is med school and you don't do well in that part, then 100% of your life is not going the way
right,
you want.
Right, no, I think about it all the time, and that's, I think, the number one thing that I see in my classmates.
Totally. I have to go to clinic, so okay. I will see you all
Godspeed.
Later. I know.
Good luck.
And all never stop dreaming.
Remember, seduce what you want today.
We'll seduce the liver this afternoon.
Assume formlessness.
We're going to play
sounds
a game.
Like all.
Since Lisa had to leave, Corey, you can sit down at the microphone. We're going to play a game called One Word Story. Dylan and Corey, you are the patient together. And your problem is that you've come to the emergency treatment center with an embarrassing problem. I'll let you guys... You can't confer, but it's an embarrassing problem. That's all I'll say.
Pelonitis.
Mark and Aline, you are the doctor. You were an incredibly overly compassionate intern out to save the world. Somehow you got through medical school with that attitude. But your experiences are starting to wear that away. Now, to tell the story, you can only each say one word at a time. So, for instance, if the doctor is talking, Aline can say one word. Mark says the next word. Aline
good.
Can say the next word. Mark says the next word. When you're done with your sentence,
period.
And the same goes for the patient, Dylan and Corey. So, are you...
We're the patients, Dylan and I?
Yes.
Okay.
I know it's not entirely... It's not entirely clear, but okay. So, ready, set, go.
Hello.
How
are
you
today?
I
am
quite
sick
today.
Period. Remember, use the period that way.
Oh.
That's...
Terrible.
Period. Tell
me
more
about
that,
right?
Period.
It's
going
to
be
fine.
What?
Period.
Why
are
you
here?
Well,
it's
difficult
to
poop.
Period.
That
sounds
like
you're
not
having
a
good
time
in
the
bathroom. I
think
we
should
help
you
take
poops.
Period.
Oh my god, I'm dying!
Dave, this is a terrible visit.
I'm loving it so much.
If this was Caps, we'd all fail.
As far as I'm concerned, this is already a success. Well,
my
bowel
is R is
thunder.
What?
No, that's thunder.
What do you say?
You could say thunder.
I didn't say thunder.
Okay.
You said a
my
thunder.
My bowel is thunder.
My bowel is a thunder, is what okay. he said. Mm-hmm.
What does that even mean?
You know,
just,
I don't
you
know.
You just have to go with it. That's improv.
The
lightning
bolt
is
inside
the
Don't look at him. He can't help you.
Gut.
Okay.
Period.
That
is
interesting.
I
think
I
should
read
more
about
whatever.
Oh, jeez. Maybe.
Ailing.
Ailing.
Like, whatever is ailing.
Maybe.
No, you.
You can't control the other person. Well,
I
really
need
relief.
Period.
Oh.
I
think
that
we
can
do
procedures
on
your
butt.
Period.
Great.
When
can
you
begin?
Period.
How
much
money
do
you
think
you
need
to
have
for
it
between
myself
and
my
Amish
wife?
We
can
contribute
significantly
in
pain. Paying
the
cost
of
procedure.
Period.
Surprise.
We
are
accepting
you
as
free.
We
think
that
you
can
stay
for
tonight
and
have
your
procedure
done
tomorrow.
We
like
performing
run on.
Period.
We like performing run on, period.
I'm
going
to
need
to
think
about
this
because
it
is
an a parentheses and
thank you for leaving that open.
Big
decision
to
make
by
myself.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
Period.
Take
no
prisoners.
Exclamation point.
And scene. Wow, that was very good.
That was not. I don't think Second City is going to be calling.
No, that was actually very good. I have tears in my eyes from laughing. This is an interesting experiment. I would like to say that I'm particularly proud of both Dylan and Mark, who every time I come up with these games seems to be like a little bit puzzled as to why I'm doing them. But I'm just kidding. There have been one or two occasions where you've been like, oh no, there was one occasion where you were like, oh no, this has just gone off the rails.
There was one where it did go off
the
rails.
Yeah, it did completely go off the rails.
The one with the balloons where we had taped and it's like, it was an endless.
We're doing that again.
That wasn't.
We're doing that again.
We're going to get worse every year that we're in science training.
I think that just needs to be modified a little bit.
Yeah.
Anyway, we are at an end to our show, people. But, you know, I loved having you guys here. I now need to go and wipe my eyes because they're just filled with laughter, tears.
Leers.
Happy tears.
Leers.
Leers and hears.
Thank you so much for
put in the hears.
Thank you so much for hanging out with us today, listeners. If you like what you hear, go to iTunes, whether you use iTunes or not, and give us a review. The reviews there help us grow the show, help us make us feel good. As always, we're listening all over the damn place. Send us an email at theshortcoats@gmail.com. Hit us up on Facebook or Twitter. Visit us at theshortcoat.com/tell us. The show is made possible by a generous donation by Carver College of Medicine student government and the Writing and Humanities Program. Our executive producer is Jason Lewis. Our intern is Corey Christensen. And we're still in the market for another. Our opening music is by Dr. Box. And our closing music is by Agrofox. talk to you in a week.